Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm thrilled to bring the show that I have for you today to you today. We have three incredible guests on today, and we're going to start with one of the most dynamic women I've ever spoken with on the show, or actually I've never met her in person, but I feel like I've met her in person. Diane Collins is my guest today. She's my first guest, and she wrote an incredible book, Do You Quantum Think? And she actually takes an aspect of how we perceive and observe, a new aspect of thinking that actually gets you to enlighten your perspective, waken up, awaken yourself to a new dimension. And she's such an incredible guest. You're going to love her. Diane Collins she's an original thinker, and she's one of the most foremost thought leaders of our time. She's dedicated her life to helping people live spirited, joyful, and masterful lives. And she's worked with CEOs and Fortune 500 companies, working with evolutionaries and with her groundbreaking system that she's created called Quantum Think. And Quantum Think is what we're going to be talking about today, as well as her book, Do You Quantum Think? And I want to bring on our guest, our first guest, Diane Collins. Diane, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today. I am so looking forward to vibing with you on this incredible book, Do You Quantum Think? And, you know, the aspect of quantum think that you've created this concept, quantum think, and it's taking that psychological, that spiritual, and that perceptional awareness to a whole new dimension. Let's dive in and talk about this. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's such a delight to be with you again. And,
I know.
I was thinking about this in terms of your, you know, in the context of the title of your show, Unlimited Realities. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, people want to know, well, what is quantum think? And when you realize, as most of the people listening now, I'm sure, every one of us listening, we realize that our realities are unlimited and that we have been given the gifts of being able to create or co-create with whatever these universal forces are. And so we all talk about mind, body, spirit, and we know about subtle energy and intuition and intent and all of these things, and thought creates reality. But we have had very little, I would say, attention on our actual thinking. And because, you know, and every leader in this field will tell you, and as well as the great masters, Buddha, right, all that we are is a result of what we've thought, that we need to put some attention on this. So I was just going to say, in terms of your show title, and which is the context of all the conversations, that what quantum think does as a system of 21 principles and practices for the mind and awareness to put this all together into one is to, we've been brought up under a limited reality, that of the, what I call lovingly, the old world, industrial age world view, the view that said only physical matter is real, the view that we've become unwittingly accustomed to thinking in either or, in linear step-by-step time, and what I would call circumstantially based. So the big shift, my whole intent, I guess, of my life is to have us living the wisdom by making the leap to the unlimited reality by way of thinking and living from the principles rather than looking at them and trying to apply them from a more limited point of view.
Great. Now, in getting into the different aspects of what is quantum think, you've created or you use and you have developed a system that really utilizes the principles of intuitive perceptional awareness and observation from a perspective of non-reaction. And you have these pieces here where, you know what I love about your book is it's broken up in two parts. You have the first part, it's kind of like your wake up aspect. And the second part is really the delving into the practices and developing the mind and the awareness. And the wake up part really has, it's broken down, you have it into these chapters, but there's this piece that we look at in the waking up part that we kind of start to look at ourselves in a different perspective, and the observer of ourselves becomes a little bit more deepened, shall we say. Because you really write the book in a way that you make yourself, the reader, look at yourself. The observer really comes forefront. You know, it's like, here we are, okay.
Right. Awareness of our own awareness. Because you know what I discovered? It's like I had this dilemma, Lisa, that, okay, if thought creates reality, you know, and you, I'm glad you brought up about part one, wake up, you know, part two is live the wisdom, here you can. But part one is I am a little bit maverick my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, somebody tells me something, and I think, well, okay, let's start quantum thinking. Well, why should I? You know, and it really comes from that. Why should I? So I did look at, you know, taking us through, because it's really not my story. It's our story of humanity. It's like, what is our situation now? We know we want to make this great shift, and it's a shift in consciousness, but how do we do it? And right. Then looking at, you know, what is wisdom? What is mind? What is mastery? And what's keeping us from mastery? In many ways, we all have a little bit of, you know, the know-it-all in us. So when you look at even talking about these kind of topics of intuition, of intent, and subtle energy, and how do we use it, and the chakras, and resonance, and we all think we know it. And so this becomes a kind of impediment in our progress, because we know, and so there's a practice in quantum think, one of the very simple practices we can start right now, I like to do it for myself, is to listen from not knowing. Listen from not knowing, and not knowing is a hyphenated term. And we have to do this, Lisa, as an act of consciousness, as a conscious act, because we're always in life from knowing, otherwise we couldn't survive. You know, we all have experiences and knowledge and facts and, you know, and so to listen from not knowing is to literally be in the moment and connect to the quantum field, the field where we are connected to infinite intelligence, to this energy intelligent field that is also a conscious field. So as you're reading, so what I discovered is that how are we going to get from just knowing the wisdom conceptually to actually living it, to be the walking, talking embodiments, a la the famous Mahatma Gandhi, you know, be the change you wish to see. Well, how do we do that? That was my quest. So what I realized is that when we can bring something into our present moment experience through our awareness, of awareness, that's what you're talking about. This, you know, being able to, I call it, both be in the transcendent state where we're aware of that unboundedness of which we are part and parcel, and at the same time be in the imminent state, the state of which, you know, you're a woman, you're a mother, you're a radio right. show host, you're a writer, you're a lot of things. But, you know, and all the different roles that we each play in life, that right. when you can be in those two states simultaneously, then we gain command over our life. I have a, you know, the mantra of quantum think, when you master your mind, you master your life. It's not mind control. It's learning
right.
the faculties of mind, how they work together, the things we didn't learn in school, and seeing them in the overarching system. So just to complete on this, what I discovered is that, and my intent in anyone reading Do You Quantum Think, is that you connect to your own awareness as you read, and I think that's what you were referencing. You connect to your own awareness, and when that happens, I call it a new world view of learning, the art of distinguishing, is that you distinguish things in such a way that it alters your relationship to it. It opens up possibilities, and it gives you more command over whatever it is that you're reading about or thinking about. And that's, I hope, that's my
right.
intent for every one of us as we read.
Right. And as you expand your mind, it's impossible for it to go back to its less evolved state. So as you're evolving your perception awareness, and as you said earlier, the observer is looking at things from a perspective of maybe non-reactive and looking at the effect of what where our awareness is holding. You have the power of consciousness and co-creation both as not only a responsibility, but it's a choice. I mean, throughout the book, you're letting us know our choice lies in where our mind goes, where our mind thinks, how we focus, what we put our attention upon, what we feed it, what we give it. And so it is a dynamic that you've really, this quantum think is an incredible concept. And I think that the principles and the dynamics that you've created within it are truly life-forming, life-changing. And this piece of when you master your mind, you know, like we know, the human condition is not easy. It's not easy to master your mind, but with your principles, it's an easier process.
Thank you. Right. Because listen, I like ease. I like entertainment. I like fun. So I wrote it like that, and I thought, well, how
yeah.
do we? Right. Why? Let's like give up the struggle and the analysis, and you know, the premise of quantum think is really what. You know, an aspect of a revelation I had. And so when you think about, you know, well, how do we make our mind our friend? Because whatever we learn, the fact is our life is experienced moment by moment. And we experience what we hold in mind. And we could say, you know, the inner feeling tone of our body, what we're holding in our intent body, which gives rise to the resonance and what we emanate and attract. But just going to my revelation is that I realized that, you know, and I know you read the book, but in the very beginning I say, wait a minute, what if there's nothing wrong with us? You know, what if, you know, these reactive, what I call least action pathways, these habitual thoughts that enter and that we give meaning to and have an emotional response to, whether, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the sublime, I realize that our thinking is not free and independent, even though we all like to think of ourselves that way, and we have the opportunity in every moment to choose our thought. But to the extent to which we're conditioned in these automatic patterns, then, you know, obviously we're not in command. But what I realized, Lisa, is that our thinking is shaped by the assumptions and beliefs of the overarching worldview. Very clearly, you know, simply,
mm-hmm.
what we believe
right.
to be true about the nature of reality and how it works. Now, even though we're in a quantum age, we have all the spiritual and quantum principles now. in our mind field, we're still, as a humanity, very much under the influence of that limited industrial age worldview. What was it? It was a worldview that gave rise to machines that scientists saw. The universe is a giant machine. So I say kiddingly, but half kiddingly, in many ways, we became mechanical too at that stage in the evolution of humanity. And so now you can create a new relationship with your mind that will free you with your thinking in two ways. One way is to see, when we can make the distinction of how the old worldview has conditioned our thinking and realize it's not personal, it's just a cultural stage in the life of, you know, the overall life and soul of humanity. And when we can see the limit in ourselves, we instantaneously go beyond it, like you said before. You know, once you have a transformation, it never goes back once you have the higher awareness. So that's one way that we can create a new relationship with our mind and our command over, what I mean by mind is not the cognitive left brain. I mean what we hold in awareness. And then the second way we can do right now in this moment, which is very, very important, because one of the quantum discoveries, of course, is, or the, let's say, acknowledgments of a quantum worldview, is that we exist in fields. The fields are invisible. And, of course, the old world education didn't acknowledge that. And we don't learn about, you know, our mind-to-mind and mind-to-matter connections. Now we have the knowledge. But because we exist in fields and we're connected through these fields, we know that, you know, you walk into a room of happy people, you feel it. Well, how do you know that? You didn't hear them say a word. You don't even know them. But we obviously sense one another's energetic. So this is also true. I call it now. I didn't put it in Do You Quantum Think. The thoughtosphere, I call it, for fun. There's a thoughtosphere. We are in a mind field as well, okay? And one aspect, important aspect of the field is mind. So what I say, Lisa, is that this can free you forever, just this one distinction I'll make right now. We can make a distinction between a thought that we originate that initiates from you and a thought that's just visiting from the surrounding mind field. Because you know how people say, spirit told me, right? You get a yearning of the soul or spirit. Well, the same is true with thoughts. So we're picking up, I say, I've been watching a lot of spy movies lately. We're picking up intel. I've been watching Chuck. Alan and I are addicted to, I don't know, it's an old thing. We're watching it on Netflix. But anyway, it's cute, you know, kind of funny about spies.
Right.
But anyway, it's, you know, we're picking up thoughts that I say are not even your own. You do not have to own, identify with, or react to in any way any thought that happens to visit you in your personal mind sphere. You can let it fly by like a word, like a bird past your window.
Wonderful.
And then go back to mastering these five, what I call the five natural faculties of mind: intent, intuition, subtle energy, resonance, and meditation, which I consider a state, not just, not only a practice, important practice, but it's that state, living in that transcendent, aware of awareness state while you are, you know, completely involved in an action in your life. So when you go to this mastery, you realize, okay, I call those thoughts least action pathways, I said, that you go, oh, don't give them any more meaning. Oh, that's just a least action pathway thought that, oh, that's a vestige of the industrial age, you know, automatic whatever conditioning at that stage. Now we're taking the leap, a literal quantum leap in consciousness. I can start living and being and thinking from this new expanded, to use your words, unlimited reality. And
gotcha.
This is what it's all about. So you could try that.
That's
right,
incredible.
Now. I don't know if you have time to try it.
Sure,
to do
sure.
That. So if you just, for a moment of, you know, it only takes a few seconds of silence, and just notice thought that visits or a thought that you're initiating. Are you having any? And, you know, a thought that visits could be a great thought. It could be, you know, a thought that is a disempowering or an empowering thought. So it's not like you have to monitor every thought. I'm giving you just the space, talking while you're doing it. But it's that this is, and this is where the system comes in, is that when you see this as a whole system of principles, that what happens in any system, it's like a vortex. And you enter into this vortex, and it takes you with it. So you're not, you know, monitoring every thought you have. You know, I say
right.
Imagine the agony of it, not to mention the impossibility. But it's like, you know, when you go into a supermarket with your list of what you need, and you're not looking at every single item on the shelf to pick it out. Because why? Because it's a system. We're in a universe of systems. So when you start to realize your thinking as a system, your awareness as a system, it takes you with it. And that is what makes it easy.
Gotcha.
So what thoughts did you have? Were you able to...
I was actually in the moment of my show, so I was thinking of you, this topic, how it's reaching the audience, what they're hearing from it, and so I was very much in all of that. But
and you felt did you feel you were initiating, or those were just coming in, or could you distinguish?
Actually, I felt like they were coming in. I felt like they
mm-hmm.
were. But there were some that were initiated because when I projected forward, that was initiated. I felt like that was an initiated thought or initiated perception.
Like an intent. Oh. Like, what do I want to experience
yes.
right now?
There
and,
you go.
And, you know,
yes.
yeah. That's okay. Good. Well, you. But this is something we really can just do instantaneously on our own, because it really is important to do it when we're having one of those visiting thoughts, what I call the wretched self syndrome, the I'm not good enough, I can't do it, or any variation of that. You know, like
okay.
a wretched self syndrome. That's got to go.
Right.
Because we know we are divine. Magnificent beings. I mean,
of
this
course.
Is who we are. We are the essence of joy, of happiness, of bliss. That's our nature. So anything that interferes with that, and again, so when we have those thoughts, Lisa, what I'm inviting everyone to realize is we don't have to own it. It's probably not even, it's not your choice. And here's the proof of it not being your choice. If you were consciously choosing, you would not choose a disparaging thought about yourself or others.
That's and, for sure.
Right? So
right.
this is how you free yourself. And then what do you do? Oh, okay, you recognize the least action pathway thought. You let it fly by like a bird past your window. And then what do you do? Well, then, as you said, going forward, I like the way you said it, because right now we're always moment by moment creating our experience and the future. There's my husband,
right.
Alan Collins, who's also my partner in business and in all things in life, and he says, you know, you think you're talking about the future, but you're speaking is your future.
That's right.
Because, you know,
right.
we know there's no actual past, present, and future, but we do that
right.
for convenience. We have this, you know, overlay of chronological time. So it's, again, living in that, and that's one of the distinctions in quantum think, the distinction beyond time. I call it from tyrant to tool, to start to not be overwhelmed by chronological time, which we could be very easily in today's
right.
world, which we're experiencing
right.
this accelerated pace of change, this unfathomable daily uncertainty as the systems and structures and all of us as individuals are undergoing this great transition to our new state for a more expansive, expanded human awareness, consciousness, and connection to one another and to our world and to our ability to generate consciously our life now. How do we, what is best and what will work now without getting stuck in the past? So when you look at that and you think, you know, if we function with the, you know, being the victim, so to speak, of the tyrant of chronological time, and again, we, you know, the old world view, they said time moves in one direction, linear, step by step. It was a how-to kind of world, where now we realize, well, wait a minute, we can generate quantum effects. That's
right.
the nature of intent, is that everything, you know, time moves in every direction simultaneously because of our intuition. Our intuitive faculty is so important because that connects us into what, you know, is called the non-local mind field. Why is it non-local? It's not located in the ordinary sense of time and space, like an ordinary object. So
wonderful.
What does it mean? That mind can connect anywhere. And when we have these faculties, we are literally functioning beyond time.
Thank you so much for that, Diane. That is a wonderful, wonderful way to sum up how we think and retraining our minds so we can really help ourselves in our awareness and co-creating. Now, our audience can find you at www.dianecollins.com, and they can, is there anywhere else you would like to lead them towards finding you and connecting
well,
with you?
Well, no, that's the best place. I just want to say it's Diane with two N's, D-I-A-N-N-E-C-O-L-L-I-N-S, and that,
yes.
you know, everything is there, information about my book. There's a lot of audio, a few videos that you will
wonderful.
Enjoy when you sign up for the newsletter. You'll get an article. You can't get there from here, which says very simply how to apply this, particularly in business. So I invite everyone to visit me there. And I thank you so much, Lisa. I know you have other guests to go to. So thanks so much for allowing me to be with you and your audience and to share this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for being on, Diane. You're always such a joy and a wealth of wisdom and information. God bless you and your purpose and what you bring to light to this universe. Thank you so much for being on our show today. Everyone,
right,
Diane Collins, DianeCollins.com. Please reach out and learn. God bless you, Diane. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you so much. Many blessings.
And now I'd like to, that was a wonderful, wonderful guest. And I'd like to bring on my next guest. My next guest is Ram Giri, who has written Heart Sourcing. And Heart Sourcing is a book about finding our way to love and liberation. He has a foreword by pioneer and father of consciousness, Ram Dass. And without further ado, let me bring my second guest, Ram Giri. Welcome, welcome. How are you? Thank you for being
Hi,
on Unlimited
Lisa.
Realities with me. Hello. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be with you. I'm
it's
good.
Wonderful.
And I hope the same is true for you.
Oh, I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. And your book is truly heart sourcing. You start off with a very a very emotional story, and you actually came in to the world through Germany after the Holocaust and found yourself kind of really addressing your own emotional state from a very young age. Is that right?
Really getting into
your depths.
Yeah, I had the good fortune, let's say, to be born in a very difficult situation and absorbing a lot of the tensions and fear and shame and terror that was around me in those days, a few years rather, after the war and the Holocaust. And it gave me a great blessing. It was called depression and anxiety and terribly low self-esteem and all of that. But it injected me with this sort of unstoppable desire to get free of these, of the causes of these troubles. And so this yearning arose in me, and I describe in the book this sort of amazing way of how I was guided then to India and to Nim Karoli Baba, our guru, Ram Dass's guru, my guru, and into the presence of a level of love that was just completely unheard of to any of us who met this man, the Westerners I'm talking about now particularly.
Right.
And it was only maybe 200-300 Westerners who ever met him, but he was one of the great enlightened people of our time. And his teaching was basically just pure unconditional love. A love so powerful that when you stepped into his presence, you were transformed. There was nothing you had to do.
Wow. Wow. And was it something that emotionally you felt in your physical body as well as like your emotional heart? Because your book talks a lot about how we can become more unconditional, which I love and I want to get to in a few minutes. But
mm-hmm.
when you experienced that love, was it an all-encompassing love that also engulfed not only your emotional heart and your emotions and but did your body feel it? Did you feel it within your whole being?
Well, of course. Any feeling you feel with your body, the body is really the antenna for feelings. But it was so all-encompassing, this is a great word you used, that really every part of your being was touched, and it was very clear that the single most potent healing force in our existence is that love that we all have inside of us.
Right.
Maybe it needs to be pointed out. Maybe we need to search for it, because love has this quality. It doesn't force itself. So
right.
we have in the core of our heart, every single person has that. We have the potential of all the love that is possible in this universe. I mean, imagine a Buddha or a Jesus or any great saint. They weren't different from us. They just used what they had. They used that potential, and it transformed them from the inside out.
Okay.
And the message of heart sourcing is really that and how we can all do that for ourselves.
Now, when we were talking earlier, you said some of the biggest gifts that you received were anxiety, depression. Would you call those the shadows that you talk about in your book and how that really opened you up?
Yes, exactly. So what we do usually with this kind of stuff, which everyone has too, we do four different things. We either run away from it, we fight it off, we complain, or we indulge.
Okay.
So I call that, this is also part of the book, I call that FFIC, fight, flight, indulge, or complain. That's what
okay.
we do real easy with our, you know, the more difficult parts of our life and existence. And guess what? None of those work. So we have to retrain the mind to do something else, something that works. And that's the big subject of the book, the skills that are in the book explained of how we can remove all of this shadow material. And it's actually very easy to think about what that is. we have these layers to our personality. The most subtle layer is our ego. The next subtle layer is our thoughts. And on the thoughts, as with ego, there are positive aspects and negative aspects. The positive aspects are great. We can keep them. But the negative stuff, the shadow stuff, we have to really work with. And then from thoughts, first there's the subtle ego, then there are thoughts, stressful thoughts. When we don't know how to clear them out, they become negative emotions. The emotions then drive our behavior. The behavior creates our world and our relationships. So when we can lighten up the weight that is on our thoughts, the negative emotions, we take care of everything else, the whole ripple effect into our whole being. So working on the shadow is this work of clearing the mind and of balancing and bringing harmony to our emotional bodies. And with that, this sense of ego becomes ever more subtle. And I also talk about the three types of ego. The normal ego we have is the ego of suffering. The ego of suffering is what we know that runs away from pain and runs toward pleasure, and it's like a pendulum swing. We get to the pleasure, and it swings back to pain. That ego
now,
can be transcended. Go ahead.
Now, with ego, when we're in ego, there's an aspect that we become a witness to that.
Mm-hmm.
Egoic aspect of ourselves.
Right.
And
yes.
Does that happen as we are softening, as we are becoming more vulnerable and loving and unconditional, would you say?
All of that is part of it, exactly.
Okay.
Now, the funny thing about this is that the personality, you know, these layers of ego, thinking, emotions, physical body, behavior, that doesn't really get enlightened. That's just the vehicle we live in. So the witness is the awareness deep inside of us that can watch what's going on, that is independent of the drama of life. Now, that witness has three aspects. I'm going from three to three. It has the aspect of being present. So we all know right now, you, I, every listener, we're present. It doesn't have to be proven. We are here. We know that. Then it has the faculty of being aware. We are aware of ourselves. And the third aspect, of course, I'm talking here about Satchitananda as it is alive in our lives. The third aspect is the bliss aspect or the love aspect. And that we have to kind of look for, and we can find it in our hearts. It's in all of our hearts, and it's a parallel quality to that witness.
Now, when we tap in, and you have this mapped out in your book to really open up the heart and to evolve the soul and to deepen the emotions. Now, you also talk about how a relationship with a spiritual teacher is an important part of our spiritual journey. Can you talk to us about why that's important?
Well, it's important for those people who have it. It is not that everyone needs to have it. And in this day and age, of course, there's many people who don't have a relationship like that.
Okay.
However, having said that, I'm talking about real-life relationships where you actually sit with the person and so on.
Right.
But we have at our fingertips today the wisdom literature from the ages and from all cultures. And it is also a relationship when you sit with a good book and you read of someone's wisdom or you read of their path. So that is also a relationship. Now, that's important for everyone because we need to have examples of living a more spiritual and enlightened life. I don't know about you, but when I was young, I didn't have any examples. And so I didn't know really what to aspire to. And I didn't know that there was a path. So this is where the stories and the relationship in that sense to a master come in. then if you have the good fortune to actually have a real relationship with a living master, well, that's fantastic, because that informs you even more deeply about what is possible for you.
Now, in understanding unconditional love, because we hear the concept unconditional love used pretty freely, and many times I don't think the depth of what unconditional love is really fully expressed or understood. And what I really appreciated in your book is how you clearly define how to deepen, and the deepening being the self-love, the unconditional love with self first, and that emanates outward into the universe to others and outward. Now, in developing our unconditional love within ourselves first, would you say that in understanding the depths of who we are and what we're capable of being in our depths, there's an immediate shift in that awareness? Or is it a gradual shift, or would you say it's an individual transformation?
It's a very individual path. As a general rule, we can say everyone has this heart. When I talk about heart, of course, I don't mean the physical heart. I also don't mean the chakra. I go deeper into the very core of our being. In Sanskrit, that's called hridayam. The inner witness, the inner controller of our life is situated. So we all have that capacity for deep, unconditional, glorious love. That needs to be cultivated. And it is covered by, so to speak, a crust of negative thoughts and emotions and all our habits and conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we can find cracks every so often to sneak through these layers, through this crust, and enjoy the heart. It's like you fall in love. Well, how hard is that?
It just
happens instantly, you know?
Right.
You find the right person, or maybe you meet a child or a baby is born or something, and it just rips your heart open. It's so glorious and wonderful. And suddenly you see this love reflected everywhere. Well, guess what? That's how life should be like all the time, and can be like. But in order for that to be constant, you need to remove the crust, the conditioning. And I spell out in the book how that can be done. And that process is very individual. Everybody is different and has a different and unique path and wonderful guidance in that.
Wonderful. I have just loved talking to you today, and I love the fact of what your book is about, because I know that people I talk to about unconditionalism, they all want more of it, and many people don't know how to get there. So the fact that you've created this incredible, precise map to guide people really to just, you know, surrender into their heart and not to feel so pressured. You know, there's a lot of pressure out there to do it right and to do it this way. And you have this, it's a gentle book. It's a gentle, loving book that really embraces the reader to open up their heart and soul. And thank you so much for being my guest today. And I want to guide our audience to your website. So I want to guide them to www.ramgiri.com. And anywhere else you would like to guide them or tell them to get in touch with you, workshops or information you'd like to put out there?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, two things I want to mention. We are in the process of putting the book out, and you can pre-order it by going to Indiegogo. It's one of those crowdfunding sites, Indiegogo. And put a search in there for heart sourcing, one word, and it will get you to our campaign, and you can pre-order the book there. I also want to mention that I offer a very unique service for a few individuals who are usually in some kind of a life transition or in some kind of pain. and want to deal with that in a spiritual, enlightening way. And for them, I offer a personal 3 months mentoring program, and that you can find on my website or specifically go to mentoringwithramgiri.com.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ramgiri, for being on my show. I have truly loved talking to you, and I love your message and your purpose, and you're such a light on this planet. I truly, truly appreciate. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
Thank you. I look forward to speaking again.
That'd be great. Call
anytime.
Have
a great week. Okay. Many blessings.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a wonderful, wonderful guest. Such a nice, nice gentleman. And now we're going to wrap up the show with my resident nutrition and dietitian, Terry Cochran, and she's going to come on and discuss to us how we can live more wholefully. So without further ado, my guest, Terry Cochran. Terry, thank you so much for coming on my show today.
Thanks, Lisa, once again for having me back. It's always a pleasure, and I always love listening to your guests as well. Ram was just so inspirational and just really a beautiful, beautiful soul and really poignant.
He really is. You could feel his energy, couldn't you? It was just a real loving light.
Absolutely. I could feel that at the heart level for sure.
I really did.
And what he spoke
about. Go ahead.
About,
sorry.
No, that's okay. What he spoke about is really true in terms of following our individual path and how we all get, and it's interesting how he used the word crust, because in my nutrition practice, I say that we get crusty. And we get crusty because we build these layers of protection and or resentment or fear or fill in the blank, and in a lot of cases that leads to self-medicating with drugs, alcohol, sugar, which then leads to addiction. And the focus of my talk with you today is really talking about addiction and really mental health and anxiety and depression. And we now know that food plays such a big role in that. We are seeing that grains, particularly the gluten grains, in some individuals act like alcohol and convert to alcohol-like substances in the liver, which feeds the addiction. We know that insulin, that hormone which regulates blood sugar balance, if it's unbalanced or imbalanced in the individual, can have a huge manifestation in terms of affecting brain chemistry, which can lead to addiction and depression and anxiety. Anxiety and depression lead to addiction. I work with a lot of individuals that are in rehab programs, and what I have found is that these young kids, these teens, are self-medicating because they have either brain chemistry that is imbalanced, wherein the neurotransmitters are not being produced appropriately, and the two neurotransmitters that we talk about in the pharmacology world of psychiatry are serotonin and GABA, as well as epinephrine and norepinephrine, and those are, the SSRIs, the serotonin uptake inhibitors, or the antidepressants, may not always do the job. And the reason being is that sometimes we're making these neurotransmitters, but they're not being crossed through the blood-brain barrier because we're not utilizing our B vitamins, our helper Bs that I talk about, or insulin is involved. And insulin also creates a masking of really neurotransmitters that are already being produced, but we can't use them.
Now, is it that we can't use them because our body's not assimilating them, or there's like a short circuitry?
Well, that's a really good question. There are liver detoxification pathways that allow us to use certain amino acids. And, for example, we now know that if an individual has impaired methylation, they will not be able to use the B vitamins. And the B vitamins are the ones, I call them the helper Bs. They carry our neurotransmitters across the blood-brain barrier. So until that liver detoxification pathway is activated, you could be on all the antidepressant medication in the world, and it's not really going to meet your needs. In fact, it could be contributing to further depression and anxiety. So we need to activate that. Yeah, we need to activate that neuro pathway by activating the methylation pathway with a simple amino acid of methylfolate, mozyme, methionine, and therefore those helper Bs can cross the blood-brain barrier. I just recently had a teen in my office who had tried to commit suicide while on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. And what we found was that, in fact, he did not need those. He had surplus of those in his blood, but they weren't crossing the blood-brain barrier. So when he was given more of what he could not assimilate, it actually exacerbated the problem for which he was given those drugs to begin with. And what we did find was that insulin was a real root issue. So by activating his methylation pathway and providing him support so his sugar was balanced, this boy is now very, very happy and is going, he was a college student, he dropped out, he's going back to school. And the psychiatrist called me and said, well, how did you know this? Because this young man is doing better. And, I shared with him that we have to look at those liver detoxification pathways, and we also have to look at whether or not these individuals are producing the neurotransmitters. And I work with a wonderful company called Neuroscience, and it's the leader in neuroendocrine science that actually really tells us what our levels are of all these neurotransmitters. I get very frustrated, and I'm not anti-medical community at all, but I get very frustrated with certain doctors that really just kind of throw a dart and hope at a board and hope that they're going to hit the bullseye. I really believe that everyone that's put on an antidepressant or anti-anxiety, we should know what those neurotransmitter levels are, and we should know if they're able to use their B vitamins before we start medicating.
God, that's invaluable information, Terry. That is, do you know how many people's lives can be altered just by that information alone? I mean, I can't tell you how many people I have crossed paths with who have been on antidepressants and they aren't working, or they, you know, it's Russian roulette with antidepressants, or, geez, I'm going to take 1.5 of these antidepressants, or I'm going to just go cold turkey off of these antidepressants. And the side effects that these people go through are horrendous.
Yes, and especially they're horrendous if they have, so we have two phases to liver detoxification pathways. If phase one is impaired, that 10 milligrams of Zoloft in their body could act like 1,000 milligrams of Zoloft in their body. They're not breaking it down. And so they are really becoming toxic, and it could lead to these potential suicides or, self-harm or, name it. It can be very dangerous.
That's incredible. I think that, you're such a little genius here with all of your information and what you bring on this show. I just am always, you blow my mind, and my mind's not easily blown, let me tell you. So I do so appreciate you so much. And now let's talk about what would you suggest the audience do if they have issues with depression or know a family member or loved ones who has been suffering with either mental health or depression. What would you suggest they do, or what tests could they get?
That's a great question. The first thing is really look at your insulin levels, your hemoglobin A1C, look and see if your fasting glucose is elevated, look at your iron levels. So just get those tests done. But then again, look deeper and find, and not neuroscience is not the only company in the country that does this. I just feel like they're cutting edge, and I don't have any specific affiliation with them. So I use them because I feel that they're cutting edge. But find out what your serotonin levels are, what your GABA levels are, what your norepinephrine and epinephrine levels are, what your dopamine levels are. Do you have impaired methylation? Do you have the MTHFR gene expression that tells you you're not going to use those B vitamins? Find that out first. And also, one of the things that is really key is, are you a strep carrier? As you might recall, I have a Patriot NIH research scientist on my staff, and we do a tremendous amount of scientific research to validate all of the findings that we do through my practice. And one of the things that we've really found lately that is really, really important is that strep dysregulates insulin, and insulin is going to dysregulate brain chemistry. And we've validated that through medical studies that are out there. And so find out, are you a strep carrier? And if you are, get rid of the strep, and get rid of the strep through natural means like colloidal silver or olive leaf or berberine, because that could really be driving everything.
Now, with that piece, would there be any side effects other than like low energy or depression or things like that that people can maybe take note of in their bodies that would kind of like be good enough?
That's a really good question. We had somebody that came into our office for the first time this week, and she was falling asleep at the wheel and had significant depression and anxiety. And so, a lot of fatigue, but also if you're craving sugar, if you get lightheaded, if you feel like you have to eat, and when we did her case study and went back into her life history, as a little girl, she literally ate sugar out of the sugar bowl.
Oh, wow.
She was that insulin dysregulated. And so her body already at a very young age was knowing that her insulin, glucose, and glucagon levels were completely dysregulated.
Okay.
And so listen to your body. If you're lightheaded, if you're craving sugar, if you feel shaky before you you have to eat,
mm-hmm.
if you have toenail fungus, if you have warts, if you have yeast infections, those are signs of fungus throughout the body.
And that would be that you are not assimilating B vitamins or you have too much sugar?
You have too much sugar. Those are the sugar things for the insulin and strep. The way that you're not assimilating B vitamins, one way to know that you're not assimilating B vitamins, that's more silent, is your B vitamins are either going to be really low on a blood test or really high.
Okay.
Either you're not even able to make them or you're not able to bring them into your cells.
Okay. Now, lead our audience to your website so they can find you for your wonderful wisdom and insight.
I will. Thank you. It's www.healingpathsba.com. And then I also have a Facebook page, and I have a blog, and I have a Twitter account. And if you just Google my name, Terry, T-E-R-I, Cochran with an E, you'll be able to find all of those social media portals where you can learn a lot about my practice and the wonderful research we're doing and all these fabulous transformations that we're seeing. And then, again, it is not me. It's working with a higher power that I feel has driven my practice.
But it also comes through you, and you're receptive enough to be intelligent to receive the information and translate it to all of us. So, yes, it is through you, my dear. Humble as you are, I give you credit and hold you up. So thank you for your wisdom.
Thank you, dear. Always a pleasure.
You are such a light. Thank you so much for being on my show today. And it's always such a pleasure, and I always learn so, so much from you. So thank you. I am going to take all this information back to my family this week and go celebrate a graduation. And I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful week. Terry, God bless you. Feel my hugs and love for you. You know I appreciate you so much. Thank you again. God
Likewise,
bless, audience. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.